Well, 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 this is Zach, and you're listening to Reads on the Bitcoin Well podcast. Bitcoin dipped below 80,000 USD this week, but the bigger story isn't the price. It's that Michael Saylor, the same guy who's been gospel preaching never sell, just stack for years, apparently floated the idea that Strategy might actually sell some Bitcoin to manage capital. He since walked it back, claiming he was just trying to jam the short sellers and haters, but the cat's out of the bag. The biggest corporate Bitcoin holder on the planet is at least thinking about selling. Now you'll notice I'm not panicking, not even a little, because this is exactly the moment Bitcoiners have been quietly preparing for. When a corporation holds your Bitcoin, that corporation can sell your Bitcoin. When a CEO speaks, the keys move. Not your keys, not your coins. Which makes today's reads almost too on the nose. We're going to talk about Bitcoin versus banks. Not the surface level stuff, the structural differences that actually matter. Who's in charge? Who can freeze what? Why a Bitcoin ETF isn't really Bitcoin? Why fractional reserve banking is the hidden tax on every dollar you've ever earned? Even as banks and governments pile in, the only thing that actually makes you sovereign is holding your own keys. Yes, I'm gonna keep repeating it forever, Laura. So let's step out of the noise of the daily news cycle and relax into some knowledge and understanding. As always, please email me any questions, concerns, or thoughts to z.adair@bitcoinwell.com. That's z.addair@bitcoinwell.com. And I promise to respond to every email. So without further ado, let's jump in. Bitcoin versus banks. Why the alternative is becoming the obvious choice. The legacy financial system is undergoing a massive shift. Central banks are moving closer to implementing digital currencies, CBDCs. Traditional banks are buckling under the weight of global debt. And more people than ever are asking a question that would have seemed fringe just a few years ago. What if there's a better way? Today, I want to walk through the real contrast between Bitcoin and the banking system. Not the surface level stuff, but the structural differences that actually matter for your financial future. Let's start with the most fundamental one, who's in charge? Banks are centralized institutions. They have a CEO, a board of directors, government regulators, and a head office. That structure means someone somewhere always has the ability to freeze your account, block a transaction, or simply go out of business. We've seen all three happen multiple times. Bitcoin has none of that. It runs on a global network with no central authority, no single point of failure, and no one with the power to unilaterally decide what you can or can't do with your money. The rules exist, but there are no rulers. That distinction sounds simple, but the implications are enormous. The second contrast is transparency, and this one is underappreciated. When you deposit money in a bank, you're trusting that they're handling it properly. The inner workings of a bank's balance sheet are largely a black box. You find out what's really in it when something goes wrong. We found that out with SVB. We found it out with FTX. We find it out every crisis cycle. Bitcoin's blockchain is public. Every transaction that has ever occurred is visible and verifiable by anyone in the world. You don't have to trust a balance sheet. You can check the math yourself. That's a fundamentally different relationship with your money. Third, inflation, or as I prefer to call it, the hidden tax on your savings. Banks operate on fractional reserve banking, which means they lend out more money than they actually hold in deposits. That process effectively creates money out of thin air, and it dilutes the value of every dollar you've already earned and saved. This isn't a conspiracy theory, it's how the system is designed to work, and it's been working that way for over a century. Bitcoin has a hard cap of 21 million coins. That number is written into the code and enforced by a global network. No committee can vote to raise it, no government can override it, no crisis can justify printing more. That's not just a technical feature, it's a moral one. Your savings can't be quietly eroded by someone else's decision to expand the supply. Now, I want to address something that's become a real conversation by 2026, because the landscape has changed: institutional adoption. Banks and governments are no longer just fighting Bitcoin, they're buying it. Spot ETFs have been approved. Bitcoin has made it into corporate and government balance sheets, and on one level, that's meaningful validation. It's brought liquidity, price stability, and forced traditional financial institutions to build infrastructure around Bitcoin that simply didn't exist before. But there's a danger here that I think gets glossed over, and it's important. When you buy Bitcoin through a bank-issued ETF or a custodial bank app, you're not actually buying Bitcoin. You're buying a claim on Bitcoin. The bank holds the keys, which means if the bank freezes your account, your Bitcoin are frozen as well. You've re-entered the old system wearing new clothes. The blockchain says one thing. The bank's internal ledger decides what you can actually do. The true sovereignty disappears the moment you let someone else hold your keys. This is why the phrase, not your keys, not your coins, isn't just a slogan, it's the whole point. Moving on, let's talk about accessibility. And the contrast here is almost embarrassing for the legacy system. In 2026, waiting 3 to 5 business days for a transaction to clear is not acceptable. Banking hours, holiday closures, geographic restrictions, credit checks, minimum balances, and ID requirements that exclude billions of people worldwide. These are features that only serve the institution, not the user. Bitcoin is permissionless. Anyone with an internet connection can join the network. No approval required. No minimum balance. No office to visit. And through the Lightning Network, Bitcoin now enables instant, near-free global payments that move faster than a wire transfer and cost less than a credit card swipe. Privacy is the next piece, and it's becoming more urgent by the day. Banks collect enormous amounts of personal data, and it can share it with third parties or governments without your explicit consent. Most people have no idea how much of their financial life is being observed, stored, and potentially used. Bitcoin offers pseudo-anonymous privacy. Transactions are public on the blockchain, but your personal identity isn't inherently tied to any one of your wallet addresses. By using non-custodial tools and taking some basic precautions, you can reclaim meaningful control over who sees your financial history. In a world that's moving towards central bank digital currencies, where every transaction could be tracked, restricted, or reversed by the government with a keystroke, that kind of privacy isn't a luxury, it's a necessity. And lastly, let's talk about energy, because this objection comes up constantly and the conversation has changed so much. By 2026, Bitcoin mining is increasingly recognized as a driver of renewable energy development, using stranded energy that would otherwise be wasted entirely. This includes flared gas, overflow hydroelectric, and wind and solar that can't be absorbed by the grid. Compare that to the traditional banking system. Thousands of physical branches around the world, massive data centers running 24 hours a day, a global armored car infrastructure moving physical cash from place to place. The energy footprint of legacy banking is enormous. You just don't calculate it because we're so used to seeing it every day. So here's where I land on all this, because it isn't just a different type of asset, it's a different type of relationship with money. One built on math instead of trust, on transparency instead of opacity, on fixed supply instead of infinite printing. By moving toward Bitcoin, you're not just protecting your savings from inflation, you're opting into a system that was designed to serve you rather than extract from you. If that sounds like something worth exploring, Bitcoin Well is a good place to start. We're non-custodial from day one, which means you hold your keys and we never hold or own your Bitcoin. And really, that's exactly what Bitcoin is about.